Very good morning to you, my dear listeners, wherever you find yourself this morning. Welcome to Eagle FM, and thanks for joining us this morning. Well, how are you? How are you this morning? It's a bit cold. It's a bit cold. Today is much cooler. It's much colder than yesterday. So how are you wherever you find yourself in this beautiful land of the brave? So good morning to you. I hope you have a very good morning, and thanks to Eagle FM, thanks to the Early Morning Scoop and the whole team, you guys for always making sure that we are updated with what is going around the country and around the region and the world before we get to work. So, all right, our time is about 35 minutes past the hour of 7. So you are tuned in to Unpacking the Day. My name is Mike Oshoveri, and you are tuned into the show where we dive deep into the stories, events and issues that shape our world. So this show is all about breaking down the headlines and exploring the context behind the news and understanding how it impacts our lives. So whether it is now the latest developments in politics, business, culture, or social issues, we are here to make sense of all, to make sense of it all together. So, but it's not just about us doing the talking. It's about you. You are most welcome to share your thoughts and opinions and perspective on the topics that matter most to you. So this is your space to unpack the headlines and get to the heart of the stories. So, and wherever you are, wherever you are, you can listen to us either on a website or from our website, and or you can stay connected with Eagle FM by simply downloading the Eagle FM mobile app from Google Play or the App Store, or what you need to do, and you can then stay connected or listening to Eagle FMs. So, and if you want to stay informed on business matters, economic news, and policy updates in and around the countries, get yourself a digital copy of The Villager every Monday, Wednesday and Friday. So, and today is Wednesday, so today's edition is already out. And what you need is just to send your name and email via a WhatsApp to 081-241-44. All you need is just to do that. Send your name and email to 081-241-44, and you will definitely receive your digital copy of The Villager every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And you get this for free, and you get it for free. So, and if you want to grow your business or you want to promote your event, we have these two the Imba and the Eagle FM app. These apps can make it simple for you to promote your product and service to a wider audience. So, and also we also have highly active social media platforms to boost your brand as well. And if you wanna do that, contact us at 083-288-400. 083-288-400. So, and if you're just joining us, good morning to you, and welcome to Unpacking the Den. So let's have a quick one and then we come back.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Great news! Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just $36 Namibian a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
My friend.
All right, welcome back and a very good morning to you if you're just joining us now, and welcome to Eagle FM, your 24 hours talk radio station. Well, let's get to on this day in Africa, on this day in Africa, the 18th of June. So evacuation day, that's evacuation day, also known as Eid al-Galah, marks the withdrawal of British troops from Egypt in 1956, ending a long period of British military presence following the proclamation of the Republic in 1953. So the Anglo-Egyptian agreement required Britain to gradually remove its armed forces over 20 months, culminating in Egypt fully sovereignty on June 18, 1956. So today, the June 18, 1942, marks the birth of Tambo Mbeki, who would later become the second president of post-apartheid South Africa. Mbeki played a pivotal role in shaping South Africa's foreign policy and its influence across the continent during his presidency. So yes, well, that's all what we have in our segment of on this day in Africa. So, and Wednesday, June the 8th, the thought for the day. Our thought for the day: poverty is a disease, but laziness is death. Poverty is a disease, but laziness is death. So the proverb conveys a profound message about the nature of poverty and the impact of inactivity or lack of it, or lack of effort. Now, like a disease, poverty can be treated or mitigated through efforts, opportunities, or external support, suggesting that it is a condition that can change. A lack of efforts or ambition leads to stagnation, which can prevent improvement or survival. Unlike poverty, which might have external causes, laziness is a self-imposed and leaves little room for recovery. So the proverb highlights the importance of effort and hard work as a way to rise above adverse conditions. So that's our thought for the day. Poverty is a disease, but laziness is death. So with poverty, you may rise from that. That condition may change with efforts, but laziness is a self-imposed, and it leaves a little room for recovery. So I hope that helped you, that will guide your thoughts or your action or choices you make today. So that's our thought for the day, and good morning to you. Thanks for joining us, and thanks for being for choosing us to be in your company at this morning. So when we get back, we get into our first item on the show.
Omutiha utekirwa kaguna imatina omjo. Chikao shafasa na nana longe shifa ya ishiwike moshiwana. Iye moyao ota ingongoti samwene. Anange shifa ya Namibia ombitombwa na wa oronjika. Seitha nina omayaguro ni randitoma yoe yonge shifa yoe okupitira mo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tuimemeha uu kakombanga nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimwepo yomo programa detu. Moambo dengera selma konora heta tuimwe. Datu ndatu heari hamano tano oniyaji. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Yes, welcome to Eagle FM. And our time now, it's about 45 minutes past the hour of 7. Good morning to you, wherever you find yourself this morning, whether you find yourself on the road or way to work, or maybe just at home. You're holy. You could be a teacher, and you are at home because you're on a holiday. Thanks for joining us this morning. And also welcome to Unpacking the Day, your go-to show for breaking down the big issues that matters to us here at home and also across the continent. So let's start with the President Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah's strong condemnation of Israel's recent military strikes on Iran, which she calls a violation of international law. So this story comes straight. It comes straight from a statement issued by the Namibia presidency. Issued by Namibian presidency yesterday, 17th of June, 2025. Now, this is not just a headline, okay? This is not just another headline, from a far away land or country. I think it's a moment, what we need to do sometime carefully. This are really moment. It's a moment that actually raises critical question about sovereignty, as part of the international body. You know, that's very important to emphasize. It raises a question about peace, okay, about peace, and also how a global conflict could shake things up right here in Namibia as well, and also across Africa, because we have to worry about ourselves now. So I'm looking at this because yesterday I wanted to get into this with one of our political analysts. I couldn't get him because he was in Zambezi and he was in the field, and he couldn't get a connection where he was. So hopefully around 8:30 there we could still talk to him today and just strengthen some of the aspect that we will be looking at from the statement the president's statement. So let us unpack this. Well, apply some critical thinking and talk about why this is really matter to us. And before maybe we get into that, let's start with some kind of background, just short background to get everyone on board of where we are. So on June the 13th, 2005, on June the 13th, that's I think last week, Friday or so, or Thursday, it's Friday, Israel launched a military strikes, so-called preemptive strikes, targeting nuclear facilities and also civilian infrastructure in Iran. So President Nancy Dayton, didn't hold back. She called these strikes, quote unquote, flagrant violation, unquote, of Iran's, and as I said earlier, on sovereignty and the breach of the UN Charter. So the UN Charter, specifically Article 2.4, Section 4, which say no country should use force against another territorial integrity or independence. So it's a violation of that, a breach of the UN Charter, specifically that article. So now the president is worried about the fallout, not just for Iran or Israel, but for global peace, and especially for energy market and also economic stability. So, and she's calling for a restraint. She's calling for restraint, diplomacy and action from UN Security Council to cool things down, So now, why is Namibia's president weighing on? Why Namibia's president weighing in on a conflict thousands of miles away? So I think, and that's where we need to put our critical thinking hats on, and let's break this down into the statement. There are three key issues raised by this statement, and look at why it is relevant to Namibia and Africa. So the first issue, which is very, very important, and sometimes when we listen to, like, when a president actually make a statement, a press statement like that, sometimes we don't really go deeper and understand why certain aspects that are coming out of the statement. So, for example, there's an issue of sovereignty and international law. You know, the President Dayton, is really standing firm on the principle that no country should violate another's borders or independence. So, and this is a big deal for Namibia. Yeah? This is actually a big deal for us. For Namibia, it's a big deal. Why? Think about it. Our country was born out of a struggle against colonial oppression and foreign control. So we are born out of that struggle, and we fought for our right, to self-determination, and we won it in 1990, after many years of occupation. So when our president talks about Iran's sovereignty, when she talks about Iran's sovereignty being violated, so that actually resonates with our history. It does resonate with our history. It's a reminder that Namibia doesn't take kindly to any nations flexing its muscle to bully another. So it's a reminder for us. So, and when we zoom out to Africa as well, if we think of Africa as well, across the continent, and this is very important, across the continent, sovereignty is a hot button issue. So from colonial legacies to modern day resource grabs in Africa. African nations have had to defend their independence time and time again. So, and you can look at, we don't need to go far. Look at the Democratic Republic of Congo, where foreign interference fuels conflict over minerals. And you can also talk about Sudan or South Sudan, where external powers meddle in the internal affairs of that country. So when Namibia speaks out against Israel's actions, it's not just about Iran. It is a signal to the world that Africa stands for the principle of non-interference. So we stand for the principle of non-interference. We are saying respect our borders, respect our right to govern ourselves. So, and that's the message that we are sending out. So now here's the critical question. Is the international community consistent? Is it consistent really in upholding sovereignty? Because that's important. And President Daitwa calls on the UN Security Council to act. But let's be real. So how often do powerful nations get a free pass? How often that, all this, the powerful nation actually get a free pass? So while the smaller ones are held to account. So that is something we need to watch closely, because if international law only applies to some, it's not a law. It is politics. So that's one issue from the president's statement. The other issue is the global escalations and economic fallout. It's the global escalation and economic fallout. So the risk of global escalation and its economic impact. So the president warned that this conflict could destabilize not just the Middle East, okay? Could actually destabilize not just the Middle East, but the world, especially energy market. So, and now Namibia might not be in the thick of the Iran-Israel beef, but we are not immune to the shock waves. So we can talk about, for example, let's talk about oil. Okay, Iran is a major oil producer, and any disruption in the Middle East would send a crude prices skyrocketing. So that would actually make that crude, oil prices actually go up. So, and the Oman Observer reported an 8% jump, an 8% in oil prices after the strikes. So, and that's bad news, not only for Namibia, but for Africa as well. So, because we as Namibia, we rely on imported fuel to keep our economy running, to keep our trucks, our generators, our fishing fleets. So to keep it running, we rely on imported fuel. So that's why when a president makes a statement like that, it's because whether it's far away, thousands and thousands of kilometers, it has that impact. It has that impact on Namibia as well. So, as I said, in terms of oil, higher oil prices mean higher costs for everything. So for food, transport, electricity, and so on. So, and the issue is who feels that pinch the most? Even if that is happening far away, it has this impact on cost of everything. It has impact on the food that we buy, on the transport, on electricity. So, and who feel that pinch the most? You guess right. It is the everyday Namibian. It's you and me. Okay. It's the everyday Namibian, the small business owners, the farmers, the single mom are trying to make ends meet. Those are the people who actually, you know, feel the pinch of that. So, yeah, and Africa as a whole, in the same way, Africa as a whole is actually in the same boat. We are actually in the same boat. So, even if we have country like Nigeria and Angola who produce oil, most African nations, these are how do you call it? Are net importers. They are net importers. When energy costs spike, when it actually increases, it squeezes already tight budget of these countries, of our countries as well, fuel inflations, and it can even spark unrest in some countries. And also remember the protest in Kenya over fuel prices hikes. So that is the kind of ripple effect we are talking about. You know, this whole conflict, can impact, on countries. So yeah, critically, let us ask why are African economies so vulnerable? Why are we so vulnerable to these global shocks? Why are we so vulnerable to these global shocks? So partly of it is structural. We are still too dependent on a raw material export and import for our essentials. So that's one of the that's basically one of the reasons why. So, and we in Namibia, Namibia got uranium and diamond, but we are not insulated from global volatility. So this situation is a wake up call for us Namibia as well. To what it shows us is that we need to diversify our economies. Okay, invest in a renewable energy, because when situation like this happen, then so we have invest somewhere, you know, in like as I said, renewable energy and build resilience. So because if a conflict halfway across the world can mess with our fuel prices, so we have to work. I think we really got work to do. So, yeah, and the third issue let's talk about the president push. The president is actually pushing for diplomacy and multilateralism. So diplomacy and multilateralism. So she's urging all the sides to step back, talk it out, and use platform like the UN to resolve this. So that's what the statement is also. That's what our president is also pushing. So, and well, this is classic Namibia. Because our foreign policy is rooted in non-alignment, you know, that non-alignment and peaceful coexistence. That's our foreign policies. Okay. And in the Namibian, the political analyst in Dumba, Kamwanya, quoted in Namibian that says this stance is not about picking sides. We have a stance that is not picking about picking sides. It's about calling for this statement. Now it's about calling for ceasefire and upholding Namibian's principle. You know, so that's actually upholding our principles of non-alignment and peaceful coexistence. Yeah. So, yeah, we are a nation that that walk the talk. I think, you know, mediating conflicts we have, and also staying neutral in global power games. So, and for Africa, this call for diplomacy is very crucial. It's very crucial. The continent has seen too much conflict, from civil war to cross-border dispute. So the African Union, which has also expressed concern over the Israel-Iran strikes, is built on the idea of African solution to African problems. So let's African, you know, solve their own problems. So, but that same spirit applies globally. We believe it should apply globally. When Namibia pushes for dialogue, it is reinforcing the idea that force it doesn't solve problems. So force it doesn't solve problems. Talking does. Okay, so talking does. So, and that's the lesson for conflict closer to home as well. So, like the insurgency in Mozambique, we have also issues in Mozambique, or the tensions in Sahel regions. So, yeah, talk, solve the problems. Talking does. So not force. Yeah, I think that's a lesson that we should learn. As I said, in Africa, we should learn. It's a lesson that we should learn as well. So yeah, but here's also a critical angle. Yeah, can diplomacy work when trust is low? When trust is low, can diplomacy work? So the UN Security Council, which the president calls on, is often paralyzed by, sometimes paralyzed by vetoes. The vetoes that come from big powers like US, Russia, and, what is the other one? Or China. So, well, seriously, and let's not kid ourselves. Yeah. Let's see who is knocking here. Very good morning to you. Welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Oshelebi.
Yes, good morning.
How are you?
I'm fine, and yourself?
We thank God for the day.
Yeah, we thank God.
We thank God. So now let me start with the poverty and laziness.
Yeah.
You have well explained it, that yes, poverty is a condition.
Yeah.
Even though sometimes it's a condition that can put to, you know, that can, you know, create some diseases, like you said. And it's a condition that can be changed. Yeah, it can be changed with efforts, some kind of deliberate efforts.
Yeah.
Put in there to change that situation. Of course, there are also formal strategies that are there, formal and informal ones.
Yeah.
Then you see now that you want to actually move from that condition to the different level where somebody can able to access maybe the fruit, the benefit, and things like that. Therefore, you need to facilitate. Say, for example, people living with disability.
Yeah.
They might not have also access to certain benefits. That one we understand. But the one that is, when you talk about laziness now,
yeah,
where the Bible says long sleep, prolonged poverty.
Mm.
So meaning that if you wake up early, put up more effort and try to do something, then you reduce the poverty condition.
Yeah.
So now, and the laziness actually, when you talk about that, especially witnessing about when people say, those who are saying, no, people are just lazy, this other one. Once you mention that word, I'm talking about in the past now and also generally.
Yeah.
See fire coming. The fire that is coming, oh, it's because it's this one, it's because it's this one, it's because it's, we are not lazy.
Yeah.
But the Bible also talks about laziness. And there are also issues, so like you have quoted now, talk about poverty and laziness. And this is a good lesson for us to learn, so that we don't unnecessarily just stay there and wait. And the dependence theory comes in there.
Mm.
Maybe it is people who have come before us, who have said that, yes, you need to depend. You need to depend. In fact, it's the colonial mentality.
That tendency, colonial dependency, you know, it's a tendency that grow within us, I think, yeah.
Yes, because they used to dish us, you know, this age. This age that we were coming and feeding and all these things. It was good because people were really living in serious poverty.
Yeah.
Especially in those areas. But there are those who were working here, depending on our field and all our hands and things like that. Tomato producing at home, sweet potatoes, omjokas. Go around in the village. You will not see those omjokas, cassavas. And cassava gets a lot of meat. But Angola is still producing cassava. That's where we eat food, porridge.
Yeah.
So now, the international matter. I think the statement from the president's office is very worth of, and it's not the first time. And this has been sounding loud that people must respect the others' territorial integrity, the sovereignty that you are talking about.
Yeah.
And there's no rule of law there.
Mm.
There's no rule of law. Even when you talk about this international law, these ones, they are so biased, they only apply to some other countries, especially the vulnerable ones that you are talking about.
Exactly, yeah.
So that means when countries get developed, they get developed to bully others, to inflict injuries and suffering to in the life of other people.
Yeah.
And they don't even feel that pain, like our mother is feeling. And she has been talking about this thing. And we even went there. We presented, we submitted our case at the international. And we were there. I could see our people arguing. They all know that, yes, this is a violation of who. No wonder we thank God for Russia and others who are at least helping us. We could have been scattered all over now again. Mm-hmm. After we have won our independence. By now, we could have been scattered.
Yeah.
So now, we seriously need to mobilize because, you see, people even in our country here, people don't even demonstrate.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to these other issues, and the people are demonstrating, and I wonder where these activities are now, this time around, and this is the good cause to mobilize people to not demonstrate, whether it's in all those areas. Because U.S., you remember Iran is saying, there's no way Israel can attack and all these things without the support of the Americans.
Yeah.
And which is true. All these instabilities and all these confusions and death and suffering of this African people in the world.
Yeah.
It is because of this so-called superpower. I don't know whether their superpower is killing people or where they derive that name. So please, let's support our president and maybe organize. I'm now talking about people who used to organize. They have the good strategy and they have good masters to follow them.
Mm.
But then to deviate their activities
yeah.
on this area and say, please, the world is very tired and sick because of the brutality that is being committed by Islam.
Yeah.
And these are all African countries, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, at one point, some years later, you will find out that, well, Iran was not even closer to actually having a nuclear weapon. And while the country has been bombed and all that, so it's just the same thing as it happened to Iraq. Later on, find that there was no weapon of mass destruction. As I said,
a lie of the devil. It's a lie of the devil, my brother. Don't be blinded by those statements. There's nothing there. There's nothing there. It's really a matter of, I do not understand. Even if you say restrain is a very soft word. They must just be limited.
Yeah.
Their authority must be limited, and I don't know how we can do it, but we can also mobilize
just,
it.
Just quickly, we go for the commercial quickly, and then maybe we can round
it's
up
really
your...
There.
Yeah.
Need lightning fast internet? Baratas has you covered. The network Namibia relies on. Whether for business or pleasure, Baratas' cutting-edge technology ensures both reliable and speedy internet connectivity. We exist to serve your needs through our high-quality network and pride ourselves in offering client service excellence. Connect to Baratas today. Visit us online at baratas.africa/Namibia or call us on 083-300-1000.
All right.
Yes, let me conclude with this statement.
Yeah.
That, yes, it's true. I hope you are not forgetting what I wanted to say. All I'm saying is that it is really very dangerous situation that we are living in.
Yeah.
And I think the forum that you were talking about yesterday for the minister gathering in Windhoek, hoping that some of these topics, like these things, will come in, you know. They will definitely be discussed. Because without this peace now and stability, then forget about this. The condition of poverty and all these things, and people will just be running around. So honestly speaking, it's very, very dangerous. I sometimes just feel at pain all the time and things. Thank you very much, Mike.
No, thank you for coming.
Let's see how God will intervene there. Because even people don't even pray for the peace. And we are commanded that we should pray for the peace, leadership, and all the people, so that we live what? We live in peace.
Exactly.
We don't even pray. I haven't heard all this congregation, all these religious institutions and all this condemning this kind of violence. Thank you very much, my brother. God bless.
No, thanks for coming through. All right. You're most welcome. Just to end that before we also try to get to our guest, if we can be able to get him today. As I was looking at the last issue, the call for diplomacy and multilateralism. So some words are too long. Yeah. So, and we talk, as I said, for Africa, this call for diplomacy is very crucial, because the continent has seen, too much conflict. So we have too much conflict, from civil wars to cross-border disputes and on, so on. So, and as I said earlier on, the African Union, which also expressed concern over the Israel-Iran strikes, is built on the idea of African solution, the African solution to African problems, without any interference from outside. So, but as I was saying, that same spirit applies globally. So. And understand, you should understand that when we push for dialogue, it is reinforcing the idea that force, it doesn't solve problems. Solve, it doesn't, but talking does. Okay? So, and that so when we critically analyze this, this is also a lesson for our conflicts in our own continent. We have our neighbors, as I said earlier on, the insurgency in Mozambique, and a lot of tensions, in the Sahel region. So that's a lesson that talking, force, it doesn't work. It doesn't solve problems. So talking does. So I was saying there is a critical angle that we need to look at. Can diplomacy work when trust is low? The UN Security Council, which the president calls on, I said earlier on, this is normally paralyzed by vetoes that are taken by, that are come from big powers, and we know them. And as I said, let's also not kid ourselves. Israel's strikes happen. So that's also happened when the nuclear talks, between Iran and the US were actually going on. That's what's still actually going on. So because the Al Jazeera noted it. So that timing, for some actually, smells like, sabotage. So while Namibia call for the dialogue is really not noble for us as and for the president. We need to ask, are the global players seriously about peace? So it's a serious thing. Are there no global players seriously, serious about peace? Are they just playing? Sometimes, you know, you have these countries who are playing chess. You know, they are playing chess, and the Middle East is the board, eh? Is the board where they are really playing chess. So you understand what I mean. So they are playing chess, and the Middle East, or even Africa, is the chess, is the board where they are playing. So, President Nandi Ndaitwah's statement, our president's statement, is not just about Israel and Iran. Seriously, not just about Israel and Iran. It's about principle that hit home for us. Sovereignty matters for us because we fought for ours. Economic stability matters for us because we feel the pain of a global, you know, shocks, when prices change because of some tensions, conflict in other regions. We that economic stability matters for us because we feel that pain of global shocks. And diplomacy matter because it's the only way we to avoid, you know, more chaos. It's the only way that we can avoid more chaos. If diplomacy is thrown out of the window, we will have a chaotic world. So, and for Africa, this is a reminder that our voice should count in the global affairs. So we are not just bystanders, and we are players, and Namibia's leaders show it. Okay. So, and we should be able to support that. So, but here's my challenge to you, my listeners. So should Namibia push harder at the UN or the African Union to hold the violators? Okay. The violators of international law accountable. So in other countries in Africa, should they, you know, push harder? Whoever violate the international laws, hold accountable. But some countries are not. Some countries are not. Or should we be Or maybe we should invest more in energy dependence. You know, I'm talking about in terms of now, global shocks. Should we be investing more in our own energy, in energy dependence, to shield ourselves, to protect ourselves from, for example, I talked about earlier on the oil, so that we can shield ourselves from oil shock, for examples. So, yeah, let's hear your thoughts. So let's hear your thought before I get to my guest, if available today. So 08333 66091, 08333 66091. So you have about some minutes to come through, and then we will try to see if today we can get some, you know, if we can get through to him and see what we can talk about on this subject still. So 08333 66091, you have some minutes to come through, and before I get to my guest, if it's available today. All right. 08333 66091. So you may come through if you want to react to this story quickly. All right. Let's see.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Omutiha utekirwa kaguna I matina omjo. Chikawa shafasa na nana longe shifa ya eshiwike moshiwana. Iye moyao ota ingongoti samwene. Anage shifa ya Namibia ompitombwa na wa olonjika. Seitha nina omayaguro nirandithoma yoe yonge shifa yoe okupitira mo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tuimemeha uu kakombanga nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimwepo yomo programa wetu. Moambo dengira selma kwa narahita tuimwe. Datu heari hamano tano oniaji. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal. Scandal. Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? Either a person doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM.
Very good morning to you, and thanks for joining us on Unpacking the Day. I'm your host, Michael Chavelli. And today we're looking at into, we just looked at that already. We have been discussing that, and we're looking into one of the most pressing issues on the global stage, the Iran-Israel crisis. This is more than just another conflict. It is a crisis that shaking the very foundation of international security and raising urgent question about power, about perception, and peace. So, but here's the thing. How we understand this crisis depends a lot on what we see and hear. The media plays a massive role in shaping our view of the conflict. from report of casualties in Tehran to dramatic night vision footage from Tel Aviv, every headline, every image, every soundbite carries the power to influence public opinion. So even the decision of world leaders. But is this influence helping to solve tensions, or is it adding fuel to the fire? So to help us unravel some of these complex dynamics, I'm joined by political analyst, a commissioner, Dr. Gerson Tindana. Good morning, Doctor. Good morning to you. How are you? Welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Yes, thank you. Good morning, Mike, and good morning to your listeners.
So let's start from the beginning. What is your perspective on the Iran-Israel conflict?
Okay, thank you. I guess the best way to unravel and to unpack this complex situation, particularly, you know, the tension between Israel and Iran, is to probably have a little bit of context of what really transpired. How did we get here?
Yeah.
Because that's the only way we can tell, you know, what are facts and what are, you know, makeup stories. If we get back to, I'll just do it a little bit quickly.
Yeah.
So we get to current situation.
Hmm.
You know, historically, you might be aware, after the creation of Israel in 1948, the war, you know, broke out between the Arab nations and newly created Israel. I mean, Israel was created, I mean, following the needs and aspiration of the Zionist movement, who believed as a biblical fulfillment, so Israel should be created, and also because of the Jewish who were slaughtered by the Nazi regime.
Yeah.
So the world gravitated towards the desire to create Israel, and shortly after that, war broke out. And then subsequently, after that, you know, in the 60s, you had, you know, the six Arab nations invading Israel. And then the war escalated in the 70s against Egypt. And then later on, after it became clear, you know, with the Arab states that Israel has acquired a nuclear weapon, Egypt signed a peace agreement with Israel. That means they normalized the relationship with Israel.
Yeah.
While most of the Arab countries largely still remain hostile, you know, because of the plight of the Palestinians who were evicted out of their country. Now, when that happened, during that time, Israel and Iran, you know, still had a fantastic relationship. In fact, there was a route, a direct route you could fly from Tel Aviv to Tehran in Iran. So the Shah's, government before the Iranian revolution was good.
And then
fast forward. After 1979's Iranian revolution, this is the government by the mullahs and the ayatollah taking over from a liberal Iran.
Yeah.
So the relationship became tense, and the relationship shortly after the revolution of the Iranian, you know, after the Iranian Ayatollah's occupation of power, the relationship deteriorated ever since.
Yeah.
Now, what is interesting about this is that, you know, that Israel, even before Benjamin Netanyahu, in the 80s, somewhere in the late 80s, had already had concern because they themselves had nuclear weapons. So, but because of the pronouncement of the newly, you know, created Islamic revolutionary government in Iran, and then they pronounced that they were going to wipe Israel out of the map.
Yeah.
So that worried the Israeli government.
Mm.
And then fast forward, you had Benjamin Netanyahu since 1995 already, you know, concern talking about uranium enrichment, that Iran was going to enrich uranium and then place that on the payload on the ICBM, intercontinental ballistic missile, and deliver it, you know, to Israel. So the relationship has been tense. Israelis has always been concerned about Iran developing a nuclear weapon. But what is shocking about that is in Namibia, we mine uranium, just to put it into context and perspective.
Yeah.
We mine uranium, but the process, even if your intention is to use uranium for civilian purposes,
yeah,
the process of processing this uranium ore into a yellow cake or uranium oxide, if you like,
yeah,
and then ultimately into, you know, uranium, yellow, not yellow cake, but rather a, you know, pellet,
yeah,
that you can use as fuel. The process is the same. Then some, you know, rogue states can then use that and put it on the payload and deliver it as an intercontinental ballistic missile, you know, nuclear weapon.
Mm.
So that fear, whether real or unfounded, has always been rising, and that's what culminated to what it is today.
Yeah. Let's look at two maybe opposing view. You know, let's play a little bit of a devil advocate on both sides. Let's have an example. You are Iran, and you have surrounded. But what are the countries that are around Iran that have nuclear weapons? It's like Israel, Pakistan, and also India. These are other countries that actually. Now you're thinking of course mostly countries that have. Talk for example North Korea are not invaded. They are not pushed around. Wouldn't you think maybe, well, let me develop that as well, because, you know, given what their relations with Israel, and Israel have nukes, wouldn't be maybe a country thinking also that, well, to protect myself, let me also start acquiring that, you know, because we see countries that don't have that are pushed around.
Yes. Yeah, you are right. You know, for many countries around the world, developing a nuclear weapon, particularly if you can place it on the payload,
yeah,
on the ICBM, and be able to deliver it within 30 minutes anywhere in the globe, within 45 minutes if you follow the Earth curvature.
Yeah.
So within 45 minutes, you could deliver it anywhere on the planet.
Mm.
To many countries, that is an insurance policy.
Yeah.
So you are insured, nobody going to attack you, and no one will demand for regime change in your country. So it's an insurance policy. I think the fatal mistake that probably Iran made, if I were Iranian,
yeah,
the first thing I would do is avoid going publicly and saying,
yeah,
once we develop a nuclear weapon, we are going to wipe a certain country off the map.
Yeah.
Avoid that.
Yeah.
Avoid that. So
yeah,
play smart. All you have to do is take North Korea, take Pakistan.
Yeah.
Now, Pakistan, for example, their arch rival is India.
Yeah.
And that's it. But they don't go publicly and say, wow, we are going to annihilate and wipe India off the map.
Mm.
You just develop it, and then it becomes an insurance policy.
Mm. Yeah.
You take North Korea, it's the same. I mean, if you follow certain media outlets, they look at North Korea as a bellicose, as somehow a belligerent, you know, state. But this form of, you know, sanity still prevailing in North Korea. I mean, they acquired a nuclear weapon, and their arch rival is South Korea.
Yeah.
But despite, you know, the rhetoric, you still find North Korea restraining itself.
Yeah.
You can't just think about using a nuclear weapon, because, you know, if you use it, then you too will be it will be turned into a stone age.
Yeah.
I think what makes this case particularly unique is, if I were the Iranian, my first priority would be to minimize, you know, rhetoric,
yeah,
of,
yeah,
annihilating Israel off the map.
Mm.
Then, if you want to develop it, you know, create a relationship with other countries and avoid creating proxies. For example, I wouldn't go to neighboring countries enriching, not necessarily enriching, but supplying military weapons to,
yeah,
to the Hezbollahs,
yeah,
and then you have in Gaza, you know, Hamas in Gaza. So if you avoid that, then you develop it in your own country, and then it becomes an insurance policy.
Mm. Yeah,
every country would want to do that, but the only problem with the way Iran does it is to go about it and then publicly. In fact, if you go to Tehran today, in their square,
yeah,
like in the city center square,
yeah,
There's an atomic clock. There's a clock that ticks, that heads towards the doomsday where Israel will be wiped out of the map.
Yeah.
And if you enter some of their underground, you know, bunkers where they keep this ICBM and, you know, the Fatah missiles, the hypersonic Fatah missile five Mach speed, they are kept in the bunkers, and on the floor towards these missiles, there's an Israeli flag and an American flag where these trucks, you know, drive on. Now you have this thing as seen as a provocation, and so it creates this tension. But you are right. Mm. In short, if I were Iranian, I would also seek an insurance policy to develop one.
Yeah, and exactly what you just explained is the other view where I was saying, put yourself in the shoes of Israel as well, where you have actually now your enemies actually publicly, you know, saying, you know, death to Israel, death to America. And they have, you know, proxies that are right at your borders. You know, you would definitely do what Israel is actually trying to do. You know, is there any possibilities that, this all may be smoke screen that Iran is not trying to acquire that, and this is just, it could be that smokescreen, like in any other instance that we know, weapon of mass destruction in Iraq, and in the end found that there was nothing. We still have actually the agency that actually look at investigate this. So do you think that could be possible, or is there an indication that Iran was really developing this?
Yeah, if you follow the narratives, if you follow the news, remember Israel began talking about accusing Iranian of acquiring a nuclear weapon already from the late 80s and early 90s.
Yeah,
I remember in 1995. You know, Benjamin Netanyahu made a remark that that Iran was going to acquire a nuclear weapon within 6 months or a couple of weeks just away, and they will acquire a nuclear weapon.
Mm.
And then it turned out it wasn't true. In the 2000s, again, there was accusation that, you know, Iran was acquiring a nuclear weapon, and then it turned out it was not true. Yeah. In fact, even the American, you know, the Central Intelligence Agency, CIA, you know, Gabi, the American CIA director, has confirmed a couple of days ago, according to CNN, she confirmed, in fact, that from 2003 hitherto to now, the current situation, Iran has not sought to enrich uranium for nuclear weapon.
Yeah.
Now the uranium site or the nuclear site that you have underground under these bunkers are largely for civilian purposes to produce electricity.
Mm.
Like I said earlier on, you see, the problem, the way these things has been framed by the media.
Yeah.
You know, not a lot of people are really literate in the uranium production.
Mm.
Israel, every time Iran acquires uranium for civilian purposes, when they produce, you know, you take uranium from the ground, it becomes, when you get it in the ground, it's uranium ore, and then you process it into a powder, and then it becomes a yellow cake or uranium oxide. And then you get in the media, now Iran has enriched uranium to a yellow cake. So very soon they are going to develop a weapon.
Yeah.
Now, yellow cake is a normal process in uranium production and processes.
Yeah.
And then from a yellow cake, you further process it again into a pellet. And it's just the normal process of uranium production. But what did we get?
Hmm.
This accusation has always been going on.
Yeah.
And that's why it becomes, you know, increasingly really difficult, because if Americans themselves, the intelligence agency in America says that from 2003, Iran abandoned the idea of acquiring a nuclear weapon.
Mm.
And in fact, they even stated that the Ayatollah, the supreme leader of Iran himself, declared that it was un-Islamic to develop a weapon of mass destruction. Yet, but from Benjamin Netanyahu, if I have to be honest with you politically, the only threat Iran poses to Israel is a strategic threat. Not an annihilation threat, not a military threat, because Israel, I mean, we all have seen on TV, Israel still remain one of the most powerful country in the world.
Military.
Its military is sophisticated. Its intelligence agency, Mossad, is very sophisticated. They can penetrate. They've been killing top leaders of Hezbollah's, you know, Hamas, and now the Israelis' top leaders, including their top intelligence agency to Air Force commanders and military commanders. And, you know, all these top leaders have been wiped out. That already tells you, you know, their capability of penetrating and, if they want, decapitating the leadership of the Ayatollahs. But Israel is doing this, and it's aware that Iran is not developing a nuclear weapon, but rather it's more of Israel wants to become, you know, a dominant
force. We have a quick commercial coming up, and let's just hold for a few seconds, then we continue.
Great news! Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just $36 Namibian a month. Or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3-month subscription, 10% discount for 6-month subscription, and 25% discount for 12-month subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
All right. So you were just saying, quickly just make your point you were making. Yeah.
Okay. No, I was just saying that Iran does not have a nuclear weapon, and Israel knows about it.
Yeah.
And United States about to make the fatal, you know, mistake that they made in the past concerning when they invaded Iraq in Afghanistan. What happened in Afghanistan was an absolute disaster.
Yeah.
Later on, now you have the Taliban still, in power.
Yeah.
And Iraq, you know, they invaded. And then what happened? It turned out that Saddam Hussein did not have, you know, nuclear weapon.
Mm.
And even in Iran, Israel knows. Its intelligence is one of the best, and they know there are no nuclear weapon.
Mm.
There are no nuclear weapons. What they want is a pretext to invade and become a dominant force in the Middle East. So that's what it's just a hegemony. You know, it is a hegemonic tendency, because what Israel wants is first, it created the idea that Iraq, Saddam Hussein was developing nuclear weapon, and America ended up, you know, foolishly going into that war and losing about $3 trillion, probably translating into roughly over 80-90 trillion Namibia dollar. That's what they lost in that war.
Yeah.
And now Benjamin Netanyahu realizes, oh, I'm done with Iraq. Now the biggest enemy is Iran.
Mm.
And again, we see the U.S., foolishly again, walking blindly into another war. If you look at the reports, Israel has the capability, I mean, using F-35, F-16, these are fourth generation fighter jets, sophisticated to detect radars and decapitate. But what they lack is, you know, bunker buster bombs that can be dropped in subsequent and then penetrate, can go, you know, over 60, 70 meters deep underground and then destroyed the nuclear sites in Iran. Now Israel is inviting the United States, come and bomb, because you know Israel does not have the B-52 Spirit bombers that can carry, you know, these thousands of pounds of bunker buster bombers.
Yeah.
So as a result, we see again America, knowing exactly from their intelligence that there's no nuclear weapon in Iran, they are blindly again going into that war. And we have just seen recently the Trump administration, you know, going into a situation in the room, and probably by tonight or tomorrow we might hear his final decision. And if he decides, and he has already sent, you know, the armada of, you know, the ship carrier mm. and all the assets, the weapons that, you know, are going into the Middle East.
Yeah.
And the reason that is happening is, in fact, he even called out the Iranians to get out of Tehran because he's saying they need to get out. All he wants is total surrender. Again, no nuclear weapons. All we see is the same belligerent attitudes of countries who are nuclear power themselves,
mm.
you know, want to be hegemonic. And they know the only way they can do that is, again, invade Iran and then conquer Iran and probably demand regime change.
Yeah. How much power does the media have in really shaping how people view the Iran-Israel conflict?
You see, media plays a crucial role in shaping, you know, public perception and understanding of events that are being reported, whether locally or internationally.
Mm.
That's why it's always the media's responsibility, you know, to include balanced reporting when they deliver the news and make sure that the news is accurate and it's balanced. But in this case,
yeah.
what we see is you have lines being drawn.
Yeah.
Now, the pro-Israeli, you know, narrative news media outlets, for example, Fox News, CNN, and all these major Western news outlets,
yeah.
Including some European-based news outlets, what do you see? You would think, if you watch the news for the first time,
yeah.
you would think Iran attacked Israel first. That's mm. what you would think.
Yeah.
Because they're not talking about, you know, innocent civilians being bombed, Hasha ICBM missile landed in Israel, killing, you know, people and blah, blah. So you would think
mm.
Israel is defending itself against Iran.
Yeah.
But the reality is, it's in fact Israel who went to Iran and had what they refer to as a preemptive strike
yeah.
against the nuclear site.
Mm.
So now you have pro-Israeli narratives, but you also have pro-Iranian narrative, for example, particularly from Al Jazeera, though largely at least Al Jazeera, part of it sometimes is impartial and balanced.
Mm.
But you can also still see, you know, the narrative from the news outlets that advocate for Iran. They too are portraying the war because some independent thinkers claim
yeah.
that the invasion of Iran did not begin with the preemptive strike,
yeah.
but rather from the 7th of October when Hamas crossed the border, went into Israel and, you know, murdered over 1,000 Israelis.
Hmm.
So that's what the whole thing, you know, that's what changed the calculus, the military calculus of Israel.
Hmm. Hmm.
But some feel, no, actually the war began when Israel invaded Iran in a preemptive strike. So, but then you have few independent, you know, thinkers who look at these things from the context of history, politics, and the geopolitics, you know, the geopolitical environment.
Yeah.
If you look at it independently, you then say, even if Iran were to acquire a nuclear weapon, Iran is not foolish enough to go and attack Israel with a nuclear weapon. It will just use it as an insurance policy.
Yeah.
Even though we don't want, you know, the proliferation of nuclear, you know, to go on. Remember, because if Iran develops a nuclear weapon, Saudi Arabia
mm.
will also develop a nuclear weapon because Saudi Arabia, as you're aware, is a Sunni, you know, Muslim, and Iran is a Shiite.
Mm.
And Saudi Arabia has always been threatened by Iran. You remember the Houthis, the war between Saudi Arabia and the Houthis, and Iran supplying the Houthis with missiles. And at one point, these missiles were used, you know, to attack Saudi Arabia's oil field.
Yeah.
So now that is the fear. Saudi Arabia and other, you know, neighboring countries such as Saudi feel if Iran develops a nuclear weapon, we do develop a nuclear weapon. And then the situation will just escalate and snowball
yeah.
all over the world. Anyone with the potential to develop a nuclear weapon can then go ahead and do it. So that's why the world feels Iran should not develop a nuclear weapon.
Mm.
And it's true. Iran is not developing a nuclear weapon. And we expect Israel to abide to that. But now what we see is completely, you know, the opposite, and they're just going out there bombarding and just creating chaos.
Yeah. You mentioned the proliferation, the nuclear non-proliferation treaty has been a cornerstone of global security for decades. So how does the current crisis test its relevance and effectiveness?
Now what will happen is you are going to see countries, you know, gravitating towards the desire to acquire a nuclear weapon or enrich uranium to a level where you can place it on a payload on an ICBM. Because now what's happening is countries feel, look, when you don't have nuclear weapon, what happened to Saddam Hussein?
Yeah.
Now, look what, when you don't have nuclear weapon, what's happening to Iran? Look at what happened to Gaddafi. Now, the idea was countries should not arm themselves with these massive weapon, with these weapons of mass destruction.
Yeah.
The problem is some countries are unstable. They could acquire a nuclear weapon and then you don't know who the actor will be, or one day a government or a regime in that country is overthrown and then taken over by militias or bandits, or let's say this nuclear weapon is in the hand of, let's say, not Taliban, maybe in the hands of
ISIS,
yeah, Al-Qaeda. Yeah, Al-Qaeda. Yeah. What will happen when they lend their hand on this nuclear weapon?
Yeah.
So you could literally hold the world hostage.
Yeah.
So that was the idea. And also the process of uranium enrichment and keeping these things is expensive and very dangerous. It's a delicate situation.
Yeah.
Let me just give you a little hint of, you know, the process that it takes. For example, those who like science probably are aware. You see, taking the uranium ore from the ground is easy. You could take it. I mean, roasting uranium, we do that. You take it out.
Yeah.
Then you crush it into a powder or a yellow cake. Now, after it's a yellow cake, when you want to convert it, you need to convert the yellow cake into a hexafluoride, if you like,
yeah,
or gas. Now, that is very, very dangerous.
Yeah.
And imagine now, you know, some countries having their hands on this weapon with all this process that it takes. And then from the hexafluoride gas, you then have to enrich by separating that uranium, the isotopes. That process, again, very, very, very dangerous. Anything could go wrong. Look at what happened in Fukushima in Japan. The situation became deadly. The town was deserted. It became a ghost town. So that is the problem. So the arms proliferation treaty to minimize countries not to, you know, arm themselves was intended to have world peace.
Yeah.
Even though some major countries have them, but they don't threaten every day to go and use this nuclear weapon. Even let's take Israel itself.
Yeah.
When last did you hear Israel going on TV? Oh, we are going to use our nuclear weapon and obliterate, you know, or wipe out a certain country.
Yeah.
You know, they, it's shrouded in secrecy. So even now, you know, the World Atomic Agency have no idea how many nuclear weapons are in stockpile. So the issue is, this kind of attack makes the world want to, everyone wants to acquire a nuclear weapon.
Yeah.
The downside to that is that once everyone acquire this weapon, then the world become more dangerous.
Yeah, actually, that's the point. Could Israel now, could Israel's preemptive strikes actually accelerate or make Iran now wanting to acquire the nuclear weapons? That could also then, they must now could have the ambition rather than this could also then accelerate the Iran nuclear ambition rather than actually stop them.
Exactly. So the preemptive strike will now expedite the process.
Yeah.
I know, even though what will happen now is because, you know, as you have seen, most of the Iranian, you know, air defense system has been decimated, and literally the, you know, the headquarters, military headquarters, bases and and, you know, the launch pad where they placed the ICBM, all these things are being now decimated and wiped out. So it will take Iran again, you know, couple. What Israel is doing right now, if there won't be a regime change, they are hoping for a setback where Iran will have to, it will take Iran another 10 years or a decade to, you know, to rearm itself and again have the air defense system in place. So that it will begin, you know, to look towards maybe developing possibly a nuclear weapon. Yes, you are right. This attack has not helped the situation, but has in fact, you know, made the situation worse. Because now, if the Ayatollahs, look at all their leadership has been wiped out.
Yeah.
But, and then we've seen Donald Trump tweeting that they know where, you know, Al-Khamenei, the Ayatollah or the supreme leader of Iran is hiding. They know where he is, and the intelligence can pinpoint exactly where he is, and they know they can decapitate, they can take him down. But the problem will now be, you could eliminate the current leadership, but then the problem will be, then what? Who takes over? What will happen afterwards? If your hope is just to decapitate and leave Iran, you know, in ruin, now you don't know who the next entity will be. Now this next entity takes over. Now then what happens? We don't know what will happen next. Everyone will now hope, let's develop a nuclear weapon as an insurance policy. So you are right. It will accelerate, expedite the process of whatever the regime that will come in.
And we have an example of what happened to Iraq, what happened to Pakistan, what happened to, you know, those countries are left in shambles.
Exactly. And also what will happen is take countries like Taiwan. Now, China, you know, is threatening Taiwan. They claim it's their land and they want it. And they're going to do it, even if it means doing it militarily. So what is happening in Taiwan is they look at what's happening in Ukraine, they look at what's happening in Iran, they look at what happened in Iraq and all these other countries, and they feel, hang on, China has nuclear weapon as an insurance. So conventionally, when they go conventional warfare, they know they can fight conventional warfare, but you can't defeat them because defeating means they have to resort to a nuclear weapon. Now, Taiwan too might now think, as an insurance policy against maybe the Chinese invasion and aggression, is to develop a nuclear weapon. And then Japan too will then say, hang on a second, if everyone is arming themselves, then Japan too must do that. And then it escalates.
Exactly.
So all I'm saying is, you know, we hope the world, you know, reality and sanity and rationality prevail so that people understand that we only have this planet Earth as our home.
Yeah.
Can you imagine? You see, I always tell my students when I teach, I tell them, in the Milky Way galaxy, in our galaxy, the only livable planet we have seen where civilization thrives is on Earth. Yeah. And then you have all these 4 billion suns, or if you like, you can call them stars. Now, out of the sea of 4 billion stars and out of the trillion other planets in the Milky Way galaxy, we have yet to detect proper civilization such as us. What does it mean? It means not just in the Milky Way galaxy, in the whole universe. Trillions of galaxies in the universe, the fact that we have not found civilization, it gives us with a lot of responsibility. What it means is that in the sea of darkness and nothingness in the universe, there's a meaningful island floating in the space of nothingness. And that meaningful island is Earth, is where we are.
So
if we annihilate ourselves through our own human stupidity, we will have nowhere to go. You can't go to Mars. On Mars, there's no oxygen. You're not going to survive there. You can't go to Venus. You know, it's raining sulfur oxide there. You will not survive. You can't go to Jupiter. It's a gaseous, you know, planet. You can't live there. So humanity must understand that if we annihilate ourselves through stupidity, we are going to annihilate the only dot or island of meaning in the sea of darkness and nothingness. That's why it's incumbent upon the leadership of the world to understand that this world must be protected at all costs.
Mm.
Or else, while we wait, those with power will act through stupidity to annihilate themselves. Trust me, once someone unleashes a nuclear weapon, there will be a nuclear Armageddon, and the world will be wiped out. And humanity, as you know it, half of humanity will be wiped out of the face of Earth.
Yeah.
And, you know, the result of that, I mean, these are hydrogen bomb, atomic bomb, combined hydrogen and atomic bomb. Just to give you perspective, the nuclear weapon that was destroyed, that was dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Yeah.
Now, Hiroshima, that Minuteman bomb.
Yeah.
Carried, the isotope, the nuclear material that was used, that was converted into the nuclear reaction. It's just the size of a butterfly. Think about it, the size of a butterfly,
yeah.
But look at the destruction. Going up to thousands of TNT, explosion in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And now you have nuclear weapons in the arsenal of the United States and Israel and China.
Yeah.
Now one bomb is going 200 times more destructive, thousands and thousands of TNT, capability bombs than the one that was dropped on Hiroshima. Can you imagine that Armageddon, the kind of world that will exist thereafter?
Mm.
We think we are going to the fourth industrial revolution, but if the world is not careful, we will send ourselves back into the Stone Age. And by the way, those who can read and write will probably be the smartest human being on the planet after that Armageddon. So that's why we feel, those who love peace must speak out, so that this despicable, belligerent, bullish behavior where you just want to go in another country, invade it and, kill its leaders willy-nilly should come to a stop, so that all of us pray for peace.
Yeah. Are there realistic paths to de-escalations, or are we heading towards a point of no return?
That will require smart leadership. You see, Americans and Israelis are saying, no, it's very simple. It's very simple to end this war. And then you ask them, what is that you need?
Mm.
No, total surrender of Iran. Or if Hamas, surrender today, lay down their weapons, and then, the world goes back to peace. But the question is, when they lay down their weapon, what are you doing to them?
Yeah.
You're still conquering them. So Iran, too, Americans, you listen to some of the American political pundits claim, if the Ayatollah today, if the supreme leader of Iran gives an order and says Iran has surrendered to Israel and lays down its weapons, then the world goes back into peace. But the question now is, after it surrenders, what happens to it?
Mm.
So the only way you could de-escalate is if all these actors, the United States, Israel, and the Middle East, including Russia and China, coming together, creating a multipolar world order. That would lead to some form of peace. But for as long as you still have these hegemonic tendencies, where the West feels it wants, to rule over the other part of the world, that competition for survival will exist. You see, as human beings, the tendency to de-escalate and survive is very high.
Mm.
But again, human beings, by desire, we are all created to accelerate every element of existence in a futile attempt to experience as much dominant life as possible.
Yeah.
Because of that humanistic tendency, probably peace still a mileage. It's a mirage that's flying the distance as you walk it. It's very elusive. But if the United Nations is capacitated and you have top countries such as Iran and the United States making peace, creating some form of multi-order, world order, trust me, that could lead to a peaceful world. But for now, The only way to de-escalate will be probably to have a ceasefire rather than a meaningful de-escalation, because Iran might come to the table considering some of, you know, most of its military asset being, you know, decimated.
Yeah.
But it will probably just be a temporary, you know, arrangement, because the next regime will think for its own survival, it needs a nuclear weapon. That's like you gave the example of North Korea. North Korea, you know, from Kim Il Sung, Kim Jong, from Kim Il Sung, and then Kim Jong Il, the father of the current, you know, leader of North Korea, of DPRK.
Yeah.
So from Kim Il Sung, Kim Jong Il, and then Kim Jong Un, there, you know, regime survive, or the government of this country has survived. Why? Largely in part because of its capability to develop a nuclear weapon as an insurance policy against the American aggression against, you know, South Korea. That's why it survives until today. So I hope it one day there will be out of miracles leadership in Israel that will edge for peace.
Yeah.
Because once Israel normalizes in the Middle East, because that's the powder keg for conflict. Once the situation normalizes in Israel, recognizes, Gaza and the West Bank, Palestine, and you have a vibrant Palestine state, state surviving side by side with Israel, and then Middle East will become a peaceful country. So therefore, Iran will have no reason as to why they should again be, you know, the forefront leaders of the Islamic world once peace has been restored in that part of the world. But for now, if Israel continues with its tendency of being dominant and making sure that they elbow the Palestinians out and not willing to create a state for the Palestine, you are going to have this war continue for a long time.
Yeah.
Until one day, it will require probably the most stupid leader to make the most stupid and fatal decision to unleash a nuclear weapon that will wipe out the only civilization the world has ever known in this galaxy.
Yeah. Maybe finally, from a diplomatic perspective, what needs to happen immediately to calm this crisis a bit?
What needs to happen now is for the United Nations to call for a ceasefire. And we know sometimes the United Nations is like a barking dog without teeth. It can call for ceasefire, but countries can still go ahead and be belligerent. So what should happen now is the leaders in these countries, particularly the United States. If the United States, decide that enough is enough, because Israel gets all the support from the United States. So if the United States one day decides that it wants peace in the world will become peaceful, because all it has to do is curtail, place restriction on Israel and say, look, enough is enough. You're not going to do this. We are not going to supply you with the F-16, F-35, fourth, fifth generation fighter jets. We're not going to do that. So once that happens, Israel will be restrained, because they know they're not going to get, bombs. But as you know, the problem now in the United States is you have AIPAC. You know, the AIPAC is the most powerful, entity in the United States that sponsors people who run for leadership in the U.S. They give hundreds of millions of dollars to candidates who win, elections.
Yeah.
And because of the nature of electoral system in the U.S., where the richest, the most powerful can win, you remember Elon Musk tweeting on X, saying because of his financial contribution that he made Donald Trump win. That already shows you the oligarch, mentality that the bigger, more powerful with more money, can corrupt power by investing and electing leaders by using money. Now, if you can destroy AIPAC, the Jewish lobby group in the United States that, invest a lot in most of these people who are elected in the United States, then that would mean U.S. will no longer feel, an American leader will no longer feel, the desire to blindly, support Israel that way. In that way, it will make it difficult for Israel to also be belligerent towards its neighbor.
Yeah.
And as a result, you will have peace. Not just the United States, also an Israeli president, prime minister, who will be very, very, you know, forward-looking and progressive to embrace peace. Yeah. That will happen. As of now, even if an American president says we will not supply Israel with weapons, you know what that means. If they don't supply them, then they will fight, run out of the ammunition. Then what will they do?
Mm.
Then they will unleash the nuclear weapons that they have and annihilate the other state.
Yeah.
So that's the fear. That's the fear. So, but I it requires a Israeli, you know, progressive leadership, an American progressive leadership, and also, you know, the United Nations working together towards promoting peace, lasting peace, not just peace where you, between South Korea and North Korea, temporary peace, where at any time this thing could just escalate and explode, but a lasting peace. As it stands, it appears Africa largely is probably the most peaceful continent than most part of the world right now.
So if you could give one message now to the average person watching this unfolding, what would it be?
So what should happen is we know your voice probably means nothing.
Yeah.
You might think the world is so big that you're a tiny bit of nothing.
Just hold on quickly, and then we can finalize it when we come back from this one.
Thanks.
June 7 Adventure Tours is offering an exclusive 20% discount for all local Namibians for the month of June and July. Get ready for an unforgettable quad biking and sandboarding adventure in the dunes. Parents, please bring the children to come and have fun on 20% discounted prices this coming June and July month. For more information, contact 081-624-9665.
All right, your last message to someone, to a person watching this unfolding.
For anyone watching this, you know, events unfolding, it's an unfortunate event, but let's take it at home, locally. Now, if you are a Namibian and you watch this happening, you might think, my voice means nothing, nobody gonna listen to me anyway. But actually, you hold some form of power.
Mm.
Remember, Namibia, one of the top five uranium producers in the world. So its voice can be heard.
Yeah.
Speak up. Let the government take a stand and denounce this kind of attitude, the misuse of uranium that is turning, you know, this precious mineral into, you know, the most lethal and destructive, you know, weapon in the world. Denounce, speak up. Also, a little voice of Namibia in the United Nations too will add to that voice.
Yeah.
So what an ordinary person should take out of this is we should now appreciate every day we live that these things are happening. They look so far away.
Yeah.
But if we are not careful, that we must learn to coexist as human beings. Or according in the words of Dr. Martin Luther King, as you watch, you must then know what Luther King said. It should drive the instinct to want to live together as brothers or perish together as fools.
Yeah.
So it's upon us. We must learn from this misunderstanding that if we do not learn from each other to yearn for peace, things of this nature are likely to happen. Conflict begins. Then after conflict have started, it is you, the common person, the innocent civilian, who is watching from a distance, who will be the victim of these things. So the idea here is, as a normal person, we must discuss, we must engage, we must, wherever we are, talk about this thing to sensitize one another.
Yeah.
So that we promote peace. We have now social media, we have Facebook, we have X, we have Instagram. Preach peace wherever you are, no matter how small your little voice is. Sometimes when you look at the sky and you think, I'm so tiny, I'm a tiny bit of nothing in this cosmic void that even if I speak up, nobody will listen to me. But what you do not know is if these tiny bits of nothing voices come together and form one voice, and we speak up as humanity,
yeah,
maybe one day we could save this only place we call home. Remember, universe, the life did not thrive anywhere. All stories, all the foragers, all things you have heard about this world, the stories of Jesus, the stories of great conquerors, has happened nowhere else but here on Earth.
Yeah.
If we do not speak up, the only place we know as home will be a dot that will be wiped by stupidity and foolishness and will have nothing, no meaning in this cosmic void. And you will be left with nothing but an empty and meaningless universe that perished itself.
Commissioner Sindano, thanks for shedding light on these complex dynamics within this conflict, and thank you for making time to speak to our listeners, and thank you also for making time to do this for us.
Yeah, thank you so much, Mike.
All right.
Bye.
Bye. All right. That was Commissioner Gerson Sindano, really giving us in depth on the Israel-Iran conflict, and getting us going a little bit depth, giving us in depth of what is going on, and also a technical understanding of the issues and everything. Good morning. Welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Good morning.
Yes.
Iran and Israel.
Yeah.
You know, Robert Nesta Marley once said, "Don't fear atomic energy. None of them can stop the time."
Yeah.
The song's name is Redemption Song. I don't think that he was a nuclear scientist or anything like that, but I think he was right. Because in my opinion, I think that it's prophecy, and prophecy needs to fulfill. Also in the same song, Nesta said that, you know, we got to fulfill the book.
Yeah.
So I think it's prophecy, and I don't think we should stand in the way of prophecy, because you can't stand in the way of prophecy. It will happen nonetheless. But what I do disagree with,
yeah,
is the idea or the notion that we need to have this one world government, what they call the Brotherhood of Man. I don't think that that should happen, because you know, the whole ideology of that is based on a satanic foundation,
yeah,
and that is to say that man must become God, and I don't ascribe to such ideas or ideologies. So I don't think it's a good idea.
Mm.
And if they're going to fight, let them fight. Let them fight it out. And if there's, it's not the first time, if a nuclear weapon is going to be dropped, it's not the first time. You know, other countries have come back from that.
Yeah.
Here's Japan, it's still standing, right? So if it's going to happen, let me see. Let's see it happen. And I also don't think that the one good island of life and meaning is Earth. I think it's God Himself.
Mm.
He is the very definition of meaning. So I hear what the brother was saying, but you know, we don't all fall to the same ideas. I think he's right to say that. Yes, we will annihilate each other, and it will be a sad thing.
Yeah, but the other thing, Anonymous, is that once you say let it happen, then it becomes something any country can do it on will. You understand? On whim, you know.
Yes.
And some would do it legitimately, and others would just do it if there's nobody can intervene. Definitely that's just happened on women. You have a town or a country wiped out just by another country because nobody can, you know, can do anything. You understand?
There's nothing new under the sun. There are people, there are communities and countries and civilizations that have been wiped out. You know, there's nothing new under the sun. And the world still ticked on further. But for what I'm saying is that this is part of prophecy. All of this is leading to where prophecy is leading. What's important for me is not whether or not we get wiped out, because I believe in an afterlife. I believe that there is a life here after once we've died. I don't think this is it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no,
so
but even
based
then,
on my belief and my book,
yeah,
it says that actually for me and those like me, this is a good thing. I'm telling you, it's a good thing for me and those like me, who are those that believe in the same thing. They believe, we believe that this is prophecy. It must come to pass. You can't stop prophecy. At least it's telling us and showing us what the signs of the times are.
Yeah.
Right?
You know, so, but I, even, but we also have to have some kind of, orders. You know, some kind of orders. If, as I said, if we start, if any country just decided, okay, this country have whatever the case, today is mass, weapon of mass destruction, tomorrow is nuclear weapon, next time is something else, you know, and if we don't have some kind of orders, the world would be chaotic, you know.
Yeah, but that's, Mike, you must hear me. I'm saying that's what I am expecting. Many of us are expecting them, and we are waiting for that, and we are holding on to, okay, now, because the Bible says, when you see these things, look up, for your redemption draws nigh. So that means that by redemption, the struggle that we are in here, it's getting closer. Yes, those things, whether you call it a nuclear weapon, whether you call it whatever other weapon, planet destroyer, it's prophesied in my book. It's prophesied, and I'm waiting for it. I'm not here trying to save the earth. That's why I don't even recycle, Mike. I seriously don't recycle. Do you know why? Because the Bible talks about there will be a new Jerusalem. There will be a new earth. Right? All of these things will pass away, and they must pass away. So, I mean, how can I be expected to be troubled in some way?
Yeah, that's very dangerous. dangerous in the way that you can also think in terms of now. You can also think in terms of you could be, let's say, for example, a fanatic Muslim who believe, okay, let me acquire this. Let's say ISIS or Al Qaeda acquired this nuclear weapon and decided we need to wipe out all these infidels, all these kafirs,
yes,
and whatever.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's exactly what, that is true. What a man believe, a man will, you will never be greater than your most limiting belief. And your most limiting belief is the one that you hold on to the tightest. Right? It's not that the belief itself is limiting. The more you hold on to it, the more it will limit you in what you will become a slave to that belief. It will hold you in certain regards. For instance, you might not eat pork, or you might not feel the need to have a wife and a girlfriend.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, but that belief is what's going to limit you, or what's going to set you free. And if you think, if your belief is saying to you, hey, you need to blow yourself up, that's nothing on you. That's your belief. Your belief is what's evil, you know. And even the Quran says Allah is Satan. I mean, by description, right? They call Satan, the Quran calls Allah the greatest deceiver. According to the Bible, the greatest deceiver is Satan.
Yeah.
So ego sum, I must conclude, Allah is Satan. If you follow in a belief or a religion of Satan, I expect you to blow people up. Yes, that's what you do. You do you. But you can't say that we must now sit here and all panic because Iran, that is prophesied, and quote unquote Israel.
But
you
must also panic because that's gonna eat your because that's also gonna hit your pocket as well. Yeah, no.
No. It says, the Bible says that in the last days I will not be able to buy or sell. I will not be able to do business. So I must do business as long as I can, but however I can, for as long as I can. But there is a point when it ends.
And I have made my peace with that. I'm happy with that. You know, you can tell me that the economy is doing whatever. But as a Christian, I have a belief system. Just like those people that are fighting, they have belief systems that govern them. It's not for nothing. The people are not stupid. They believe something. And the belief is what's driving them. You know what I mean? Now the brother was talking as if the people are just stupid. No, they're not just stupid. They believe something. The guy blows himself up because he believes he's going to have 99 virgins and he's going to go to heaven. I don't know why anybody would want marriage in heaven, really.
Yeah, but but the thing is that, you know, you may have a deluded or misguided belief. You may have a misguided and or deluded belief that would then it doesn't help you. It's a belief that you have. But let's say for you believe we're going to have about 75 virgin in heaven. But would that be the case? You know, it's a delusion.
Remember, he's not doing it because of the virgin. He's doing it because of the God that he represents or the God that he follows. He's doing it to please God. The virgins are only a reward, apparently.
But even that, it's not something that, you know, God ever asked you to do at all.
No. According to his Quran, it tells him like that. Just like, you know, you have, let's not pick on the Muslims. According to any belief system, even if you go to the Hindus, they believe certain things. You know, they believe that the Ganges River, the most polluted river in the world, right, is also a holy river. And they wash there. And I don't know why they don't get sick, but they wash there.
But
for you to say that it is a delusion, you've got to come with something else. You've got to come with an argument. You've got to come with a way to say, to break down that belief and say, it is wrong because of A, B, C, D. And then you've got to have a better belief than I. If you say that you don't believe in God, then I say, well, how did the world come about? And, you know, this is what we've been fighting for ever since we left the garden.
Yeah.
So it's not a stupid war. It's a war that has merit according to that person's belief. So if the Muslims believe what they believe, then that's what they're going to believe, unless you can convince them otherwise, or they can experience something different and maybe convert. Then they're no longer Muslims. But as long as you are a Muslim, you believe in a certain way. As long as you are Christian, you believe in a certain way, right? So I don't think that there's anything wrong. I say, kapan.
Anonymous, okay, Mike. Thanks for coming through, man.
Okay. Oh, Mike, did you approach the ministry of the Ministry of Justice about my, the proposal I had for punishment, crime and punishment?
Crime and punishment.
The removal of limbs and stuff instead of going to jail.
What was that? I didn't pick it up. Actually, what was that?
We spoke last time and I said that I think people should not go because Nekundi was saying that the price of prisons and what, the cost of prisons is going up and he needs a certain amount of money. Mm. And I said, instead of sending people to prison, just cut off arms, legs and so on.
Okay, now I remember.
That is a serious point. I'm being serious. Can you please bring somebody from the ministry to explain to us why that is not a better solution?
I think I will send you to Helmut. Really, that's an idea that you need to speak to Helmut. I think he will enjoy it.
Okay,
great man.
Bye.
All right. Well, our time is about 32 minutes past the hour of 9, and that actually brings us to the end of this episode of Unpacking the Day. So please do the same. Do join us again tomorrow at the same time here on Eagle FM. Now, continue to listen to the programs that are coming your way throughout the day. And coming up now is Mind the Gap with Helmut. And from me, Marco Chiavelli, I wish you a very good day. And all be well. Goodbye for now.